This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au. A proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Family Matters is brought to you today by the letters LGBTIQA and the number one.
I am so excited, and thank you for inviting me to be part of this interview, Gina. We are interviewing the amazing, the awesome, the generous, the beautiful,
gorgeous,
the famous,
oh wow,
fabulous, the fabulous Jeffrey Marsh, who has the most amazing, wonderful, positive advice for all non-binary people around the world,
about humans,
about how to be themselves in the face of perhaps any sort of backlash or any sort of doubt. Is that how would you describe your advice, Jeffrey? And welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. My advice, you know, it's so interesting you should phrase it that way, because my advice is for everyone and for all humans, as you so beautifully put it. I realized a while ago that being non-binary is certainly, obviously, it's part of my story, and it's what I go on national TV to talk about a lot, because that's where we are in the movement. But it's more or less a metaphor, and that almost everyone I encounter has been told at some time, there's something wrong with you. And for me, it was, well, you're too feminine, you're too LGBTQ, you're too whatever. And for someone else, it's something else that they were told they're too much of. And so I really maximize the metaphor part and emphasize how much we are all alike.
That's a really good point, because everyone can probably find something in themselves that they were made to feel perhaps ashamed about, that they were too much something. And that's exactly right. Yeah.
Jeffrey, I'm keen to know, because you and I were born in the same year. We've grown up in the same era of no internet, pre-Ellen, queer eye, pre all this sort of stuff that's in the media. Personally,
Pre-Will and Grace,
pre-all that sort of stuff. Exactly. There was never any reflection of ourselves in that, even on the on-screen world. Now, I was probably, I think my earliest memory is 4, when I had a crush on, of course, a school teacher, and I knew immediately I liked girls. I had no language to define my difference. It was made very clear to me at a young age, I'm not to talk about my difference. And, you know, I saw a world of pairs, a world of, you know, male and female pairs, and I was allowed to get away with being a tomboy, I knew that word, up to a point in time, and that was acceptable behaviour. And then one gets older and you're kind of told, no, stop behaving that way. It wasn't until I was 14 that, and I think it was, of all shows, Roseanne had a show called Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that I first, for the first time in my life, heard the word gay, lesbian, and butch. And it was like a lightning bolt kind of running through my body going, oh my God, that's what I am. Not because I was seeing myself, but because I finally was given the tools and the language to identify myself. For yourself and your journey, because you grew up in a farm in the US, how did you start? Yes. What was your journey into that identity part and that language?
Yes, it's so wonderful. If I'm remembering correctly, that episode of Roseanne, if I'm thinking of the one you're thinking of, had a lesbian kiss.
Yes, it was the first kiss on national mainstream television.
Yes, how ironic that Roseanne has now become this beacon of conservative anti-LGBTQ.
Very ironic.
In the States. But putting that aside for a moment, it is those little mirrors into ourselves that we start to crave as LGBTQ people. And it's funny to think that it can come from pop culture and stuff that's usually not taken seriously, but tends to hit us down to our core of who we are. And it's such a beautiful story you just told. For me, interestingly enough, some of the terminology came from younger activists. So I was doing my thing, and I had facial hair and was wearing eyeshadow and dresses and making videos on the internet, and this was years ago, and it was the LGBTQ kids who were like, are you gray sexual? Are you a demi boy? Are you non-binary? And I was like, what? Google, Google, Google. trying to keep up with these kids. And I found their activism through, you know, on places like Tumblr and the places where they get together with those words that finally clicked for me in that way that you're describing. And it is why to this day I have such a debt of gratitude to the younger generations and why we have such a symbiotic relationship. We used to, you know, when I was growing up, I would hear words, I was using words like genderqueer, and these newer terms, now we have to be specific, the identities are not newer, the terms are newer, gender fluid and non-binary. It was just really good for the heart to finally be seen and recognized.
Can I ask you what it was like for you as a young child in our support group, Parents of Gender Diverse Children? We have some very young children who identify as non-binary, very, very young children.
Wait, you kind of glossed over the name.
Sorry. In Australia, we have, it's a parent support group. It's called Parents of Gender Diverse Children. So,
yeah, good.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's a peer support group, and we support parents throughout Australia, and we have all sorts of different children. We have transgender children. We have gender diverse children. Many of our children are non-binary, and some of those children are very young. And it's hard sometimes for people to understand that very young children can identify as non-binary. This isn't something that their parents are making up for them, that they are self-identifying. Their parents aren't bringing them up gender neutral. This isn't something that their parents have forced upon them. But these children are self-identifying. So, and they have the support of their parents, and we have some adult mentors who can come to our group in Melbourne, which is really wonderful, like Neville Zeisen and Jacob Thomas. And this is great for them. But I wonder what it was like for you growing up in a rural area as a young child. How, I can only imagine that you would have had no role models and no support. I'm wondering what that was like for you.
You imagine correctly.
Right.
That's number one. A couple years ago, my mom apologized to me. She, like a lot of beautiful, good moms, she only wanted the best for me. And she apologized because I grew up in an area that was so filled with hate for people like me.
Yeah.
And obviously, we had moved there long before she was even pregnant with me. So it wasn't a conscious choice on her part, but she chose to live in a place that fit her personality. And then I came along, wild and wonderful and fantastic, and also very alone. And she wanted to impart to me that she was feeling badly about that. And I said, Mom, don't. Being in that place, that physical place in Pennsylvania, also taught me a certain independence, a certain way to have an imagination. I'm gonna say something really weird. It taught me how to have trees as friends.
Okay.
Which is, what I mean by that is it taught me a kind of self-reliance and a way to be with myself that was peaceful.
It's wonderful.
And that stays with me to this day.
That's really beautiful. I was going to say that what I see in a lot of people who faced what you have in growing up very isolated is an enormous resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I see in you. And also for your mother, I can understand that she would not have had the tools to help support you and not have had the understanding back then to probably give you the support that you needed, I imagine.
And I think our parents also didn't have the language, that the same language we didn't have to define ourselves.
That's right.
They didn't have the language. They didn't have those representations.
That's why it's important for us to embrace and support parents to help them support their children. And your mum would not have had that back then and where she was living.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we've already discussed, this was before media representation, really. And the only reference point, the only thing that the media was saying about LGBTQ people in general is that we're pariahs, we're going to die, we're murderers, or child molesters, or, you know, all these negative stereotypes about who we are. And I also talked to her about this recently, you know, years after my childhood, that she wanted to change me for my own safety.
Yeah.
It was coming out of a place of fear.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think a lot of parents push back against their children who are transgender out of fear. They want the best for their children, but they are frightened and they don't understand. And we love our children and we want the best for them. And that's why education and support are the best things that we can do. Your mother loves you and she wanted the best for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 14, turning 15 when my mother found out about me. And was, you know, this is a Greek migrant woman who has already faced discrimination in a country that told her she was too much of a wog, too Greek, not assimilating into a culture. Yeah. So she was petrified when she confronted me about my sexuality. And like we said, she didn't have the language. She asked me outright, was I a poofter? And my mother's
That's
gorgeous.
An Australian that's an Australian word for a gay man.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a moment where I could either correct her on the language, which was still new to me, or I could say, yes, Mum, I am. And I chose to say, yes, Mum, I am. And out of fear, and she had fear for what she understood the Greek community in Australia would do, she rushed me to a GP to get me fixed. Now, God bless my GP, did not think there was anything to fix. And we're talking a traditional Greek GP. And then he sent her away with some medication to fix her. So I had a very fortunate experience. But it came true because when I then told my coming out story and publicly and was published and it outed me to that broader Greek community she was trying to protect me from, I didn't lose any friends, but my mother lost so many people in her life.
And this is a common thread.
It's
a common thread. Lots of parents of transgender children lose their immediate family and friends. Yeah. It's a very common thread.
So I, you know, and I was patient with my mother because I knew where she was coming from, and I let her go on that journey of not really accepting my sexuality. Now she's my biggest ally. Now I'm kind of having to bolt the door so she doesn't break it down to get hands on her grandchild. No, I actually let her in. She's gorgeous. My child loves her. But she needed
Can I ask you a follow-up question?
Yes, please.
Where did that bravery come from for you at 14, 15?
Jeffrey, I, like you, I didn't see myself in the world, and I escaped into imagination and play. That escaping into story and imagination and play allowed me to kind of be okay with myself. I can't say that I was brave then. Something clicked in me when I thought, there's more coming. I just need to hold on. And I don't want to go out of this world without people knowing who I truly am. That was what made me hang on. I don't know where that resilience came from, but something said to me, wait and come out publicly and then make your decision.
So resilience is something that we really want for our children. And I would like to ask both of you your advice. What can we do as parents, in your opinions, to to help our children have resilience in the face of, you know, the kind of society that we're living in at the moment, even with supportive parents, even with perhaps even a supportive school and supportive family. Do you have any ideas about what we can do to help our children with resilience? What can we be saying to them? What can we be doing for them? That's not an easy question.
I know my and seeing my family being treated wrong for being different for our ethnicity, but we shared that. We shared that difference together.
It's the same with my Italian family. Yeah.
No, it's interesting you should say that. My mom is to this day a Lutheran pastor.
Wow.
So quite, you know, liberal in some ways because not many women do that, and she faced a lot of discrimination. And conservative in some ways, right? It's kind of the American story, an amalgam of lots of different things. But what's the advice I would give is kids are already resilient, as far as I can tell. And part of a parent's job is creating a space for that resilience to flourish, to blossom. And I talk to LGBTQ people again and again and again. This theme comes up that we had to grow up pretty fast before our time, really. In some ways, we have to be the mature ones, the truth tellers. And it's giving kids a chance to be those rambunctious, wild, resilient kids who will play.
That
would be my...
Thank you. And can I also, I'm going to ask you another one, sorry. What about your advice for the young children themselves? So I'm making the most of having Jeffrey on the other end here.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I feel like I'm getting so much from this conversation, so it's a two-way street.
Oh, thank you.
You know, these kids are also so wise, and what kids in general and LGBTQIAA plus kids in specific, what they get again and again from the quote-unquote adult world is you're not valid, you're not real, you're, especially trans and non-binary kids are just getting this, you know, you're faking it, whatever the discriminatory language is. And what I'm just realizing from talking to you two brilliant people is that that sort of, we are real, we are valid, of course, but it gives us this place in society that is also more magical, that is also like a step toward the, I don't know, spiritual. And it's just reminding me of all these cultures where non-binary people are considered the shaman and the ones that the village goes to hear the truth, right?
So true.
Especially kids have a chance to not be quite so programmed yet to start faking it, that they have it all together. You know what I mean?
I do. They get to be authentic.
Yes. And from them we can learn that authenticity.
I think the thing with kids is that they're really authentic because they haven't learnt how not to be yet.
They don't lie.
No.
And I think there is an assumption that children lie, but they don't. They can be creative and magical.
There's a difference between a kid saying, yeah, I didn't take that lolly, I didn't, and a kid saying who they are. There's a massive difference. They don't lie about that stuff.
Yes.
Jeffrey, I'm keen to know for yourself, and again, because we've grown up in a similar era, I really struggled not having role models. But who were the people that inspired and the people that kind of lit up your world and you saw and thought and you got strength from? Who were your early role models? And we're talking teenage down.
Teenage down.
I know.
You know, When you were, this is going way back. I'm not that old.
No, because I'm with you, so I'm not going to let you go there.
Exactly. But wait, speaking of magical and spiritual, I was born 7/7/77.
That's
July 7th.
That's special.
And it's, well, so anyway, I'm a very lucky person. I think I'm lucky that I had these role models that were sort of breaking through the noise when I was a teenager and younger. One of them I think of is David Bowie.
Oh, yes.
And another is a young RuPaul who was around. And believe it or not, this may sound funny, but I was really inspired and drawn to Dame Edna.
Yes, Possum.
And yes, Possum. Yeah. And the sort of ability to, you know, that is a persona, right? Mm. But the truth-telling that can come from being that sort of heightened version of what it means to be a human, all of that was stuff that sort of got through the dominant culture and inspired me greatly when I was a kid.
You're known and quoted as being the internet's most beloved anti-bully.
Oh, I love that
which
line.
I love.
That is awesome.
I absolutely love. Now, that doesn't just happen overnight because you survived the rural town. You went to study the arts to be a cabaret performer. At what point in your life did you say, no, there's more I need to be doing here on this planet? Because that's what you're doing. You are giving so much to a global audience.
Well, let's be clear from the outset, and I've hinted at this a couple times, but I receive so much. So yes, people say that I'm inspirational, or whatever language they use, right? But I tell you, I went recently to talk to a GSA, the Gender Sexuality Association. Mm-hmm. So it's a school group with LGBTQ kids in it. And I went to a GSA at a middle school, and these kids were so on top of how to talk about their experience and how to be open. And
fabulous.
Someone like me who grew up with such hate, it just gives my soul such a boost, mm-hmm. you know, my heart such a boost to see that. So I receive quite a lot. And I tell you, I am Buddhist, and I have been studying Buddhism for about 20 years. The thing that helped me was being so desperate about the intense, burning self-hate that I was taught, that I got so desperate that I went and lived at a Zen monastery for a while.
Wow.
Here in the U.S. And then everything started to become clearer about what you can do with your life and how you can feel good about who you are. And I'm not recommending everybody needs to drop everything and go to a Zen monastery, but there are those moments in life when you begin to step out of yourself, and doing the work that I do has helped me to kind of stay out of that gunk, if that makes sense.
It does make
sense. The
gunk
that we were all taught.
And your book, I'm wondering if you can tell us a bit about that. And
How to Be You.
How to Be You.
Yes. It's,
and also, I wonder if you can tell me what age group it's really helpful for.
Target audience.
Well, it's so wonderful that you bring that up, because Penguin Random House, the publishers, decided to publish it as a general title.
Yeah.
Here in the States, we have a category called YA.
Yeah, we do too. Young adult.
Okay, good.
Yep.
And it's not a YA title, and they purposefully made it a general title so that we could be as inclusive as possible.
Great.
That's
so
huge.
It is intentionally a book for all of us. It speaks to people who are young at heart, and at the same time, it is absolutely intended to be a love letter to my 11-year-old self.
Oh.
If that makes any sense.
That is so beautiful.
Jeffrey,
it makes so much sense.
Can we hear more about the beautiful 11-year-old Jeffrey?
Yes, please.
Absolutely.
What did Jeffrey need to hear?
11-year-old Jeffrey needed to hear, there is nothing wrong with you. Please, please keep twirling. Keep running around the barnyard. You wear what you want. You love what you love. Never, 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 never give in to the shame they're trying to teach you.
That is such a beautiful message. I would love all children to have that message.
Me too. It's why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
And you know, even children can, in 40-year-old bodies and 50-year-old bodies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we all still need that message.
Oh, God, yeah.
We do. We really do. And this is the thing, you know, I think when we talk about giving these messages to children who are transgender or gender diverse, we need to expand mm-hmm. that message to all children and say, you can be whoever you are. And this is an important message for all children. And we need to break down gender stereotyping for all children as well.
Mm.
I think this is something that I think all children are feeling trapped and shamed into getting into these rigid little boxes.
Mm.
And all children need to break free and be who they are. Yeah, it's so important.
Well, without even getting into the fact that the rigid little boxes keep, it's not just a separate gender system, you know, the binary, it is separate and unequal.
Mm. Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
So now it's not just boys are good at this and girls are good at this. It's that girls can't do math and, you know, it's all these ridiculous ideas that keep certain people down and certain people up.
Exactly.
And we need to get rid of that too.
And I think we're seeing an enormous pushback against those rigid gender roles, which is fantastic. But what we need to do is go further than that and say, you know, we need to be talking about gender expression and gender identity as well as, you know, not just having boys and girls and talk about all of it together.
I agree. It is all interrelated to me.
It is, exactly. It's interrelated.
Yeah.
I know from my recent experience and, you know, complete learner, newbie parent, I was exceptionally mindful of the pinks and the blues and all that sort of stuff. And I'm, you know, I'm fairly butch and everyone kind of joked that I was going to dress the baby in double denim, which is not a bad thing, but I'll let Harper make that decision.
Yeah.
And
she might like pink little dresses.
She might.
She might.
She might. And I'll accept that if she does. And but I saw a world that I had not been exposed to the minute my child was born. Everyone wanted to know the child's gender. And then a rush of pink entered my home in a way that was so offensive, and the way that people would refer to my child as she's so pretty and it blew my mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely blew my mind. I specifically chose the name Harper because one, a favorite author of mine, but also I love the name of Harper because it doesn't identify gender.
It's very neutral.
It's very gender neutral.
Yeah.
Because I'm also aware of the inequality of women in our society now. We still don't make the same pay. We're still not in the same positions of power across so many industries.
Correct.
And I don't want my child ever to think that they can't dream or achieve anything that their heart desires. It's so hard to break that message out to others.
It is.
It is really, really
See,
hard.
I was really lucky. I was brought up by a mother who was butch, who was a builder in the 70s.
Wow.
You know, she was, you know, she built house, she built units. I mean, she was out there doing her thing, fixing the mower.
Wow.
And Dad was inside playing the guitar and reading books. So
wow.
I didn't have that kind of gendered upbringing, so I had a little bit of a head start there. But I did notice it as I was growing up. So it's and when I had my own children, I saw that I had the same experience. It's incredible. Now marketing for children is so much more gendered than it was in the 70s.
Really?
So we need to do something about that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, girls are treated a certain way and boys are treated another way, and gender nonconforming kids are just kind of left out of the conversation altogether.
Yeah.
They are. They are.
So,
and I think it's really difficult for us to educate children about gender diverse children because I noticed you tweeted something about it today, Jeffrey, that a lot of adults are very confused about the difference between gender and sexuality, and they think if we're teaching children about gender identity and gender expression that we're somehow giving them sex education. They don't seem to understand the difference between educating children about gender stereotyping and gender identity, and somehow we're teaching them sexuality. I mean, but also that's not what we're doing.
Well,
I mean, you're not teaching six-year-olds sex education. We're teaching them about gender identity and gender expression, and they're different things. And that's a very hard concept to get through to some people.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so much to our community. There's so much to just our everyday lives that is cut out from kids. I mean, we talked about having no role model. I didn't want, when I was a kid, I didn't want or necessarily even comprehend a role model for how to have sex when I was an adult. I didn't need to know that stuff yet, obviously. I wanted a role model about how to express myself.
Exactly.
How to live without shame.
How to
be free. It is so wonderful to be part of a community that is well-versed in transcendence. Most of us know that cycle very well of being told there's something wrong with you. And I am so proud of my community because I meet person after person after person who is part of our community, who is taught that you shouldn't be so butch. You shouldn't be so whatever it was. You
shouldn't be so queer. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so true.
Did the personal work. And then did the personal work to move beyond that whole system as an adult. Mm. And yes, it's a work in progress, but so many of us have done that work of transcending the stuff that doesn't matter in life. And that just makes us a pleasure to be around.
Yep. Also resilient, also wonderful.
What I was keen to know is we unfortunately had to go through a marriage equality campaign here in Australia last year, which thankfully the outcome was a positive one. Still not great because the people that were thrown under the bus during that campaign were trans, gender diverse kids and rainbow families. We are still suffering trauma from that. Now, we've also seen what's been happening in the States. Now, I'm always ripping my hair out when people are saying to me, you have marriage equality, it's fine now. But I think, and from our view of the United States, it is, and I think that I love the description someone once called it, equality is a pendulum. It can swing one way and the other very quickly. What we are concerned as to what we're seeing in the States with all these rights being rolled back. Can you tell us what is happening there now? And I remember, I think it was in your TED Talk where you were saying everyone's trying to do everything. Could you give us some insight into the world that you're seeing now in New York and in the United States?
I sure can. So, you may have noticed misogyny and queerphobia and transphobia and all of that stuff has triumphed.
Yeah, it's a bit hard to miss.
Recently.
Yeah.
In the States. And so some of us are understandably in survival mode.
Mm.
That's another thing that our community knows how to do pretty well.
Mm.
And there is not a lot of bandwidth to do some of the, how do I phrase it? Right now, things are so dire that something like marriage equality, I look back on that fight and I think how quaint that was.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That, you know, two rich white guys could get a wedding cake.
Yeah, exactly.
Problem, right?
Yeah.
And now it's, I don't know, as we are recording this, the Trump administration rolled back some of the rights for transgender people in our prison system. Here, there were some, I haven't had time to research the case in depth, but there were some evangelical women that wanted to sue the prison system. They were prisoners themselves, and they tried to sue the prison system, et cetera, et cetera. But Donald Trump's administration has rolled back some of the rights for trans prisoners as far as where they can be, which because everything is segregated by gender here in the States, including the prison system, where they can be and what their bodies or where they are in their transition dictates where they can be in the prison system. And it's going to be very difficult, especially for people of color here in the States. And another, you know, recent one was that there were protections that President Obama put in place for trans students at school, and this current administration rolled those back as well. So schools are now able to discriminate a little bit more against the kids, which is probably, you know, very pertinent to our conversation today.
And we're starting to see groups now reforming that were quite vocal against marriage equality, but vocal against trans and gender diversity. We're seeing their ranks forming because they're coming after our kids again.
And they're working with those groups in the States as well.
Exactly. And they're targeting our schools. And there is this massive fear campaign, you know, that we, you know, that we are converting children and you know, and the conversion debate, I can't believe, even resurfaced with politicians, you know, almost kind of thinking it. And it's just, it's blowing my mind here. But seeing the States, we are worried for our family out there, because we consider LGBTQI plus community equally a part of our family. And we are so worried
seeing this, especially
and frightened, because we feel that we're almost going to start following, because we do follow a lot of what the United States does.
And it's so sad, you know, on the back to back, you know, Obama administration was making so much progress, and it just it's just so sad to see all of that gone,
especially in regard to young people. And the school system and how the kinds of rights that students should have. And it was going quite well there for a moment.
Yeah.
But you brought up the idea of a pendulum before, and I have absolute faith that there is another swing coming.
I agree.
And if these moments have taught us anything, it is the absolute importance of working together.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of, I've had more people from other social justice groups reach out to want to work together.
That's wonderful.
Than I ever had before.
Wonderful news.
You know, this is freedom for one is freedom for all.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
And we've never had more of a unified front.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. I really hope that happens for us in Australia as well, that everyone gets together to protect the minority.
And that's my fear. So many people that enjoy the privileges that have been fought for by our elders in the community got quite active during the marriage equality campaign. But now they've gone back to their comfy sofas while they eat their wedding cake. And I fear that people don't see how imperative it is to continue being active, not only for yourself, but for those around us. When it comes, what would be your tip, Jeffrey, for a young person who wants to be an activist, to help that young person see themselves in this space and give power to their own voice?
You must be yourself. Now, a lot of people don't quite know what that is, and that's okay. You don't have to have an answer for everything. But the foundation of activism is being yourself without shame. That's the key. And, you know, when before the election, capital T, capital E, in our country, I was going around talking to students, giving talks in lots of different places. And as soon as that event happened, everything became about activism, which is not a surprise. But what I naturally fell into, what people were craving the most, was how to get from where they are to changing the world. And the bridge between those two places is to cut the feeling sorry for yourself, cut the feeling bad that we were all taught, learn to be yourself and be open and be a beacon of light and lightness in the world, that's your bridge to it seems counterintuitive because we're told doing any of that stuff is selfish and shouldn't, and you got to save the world first, and you got to run around like a chicken with your head cut off. To speak to my farm upbringing, I've seen that happen. You know, it's you got to run around and get little done and be stressed out. No, it's quite the opposite. You got to do that self-care and create the base for changing everything.
I think that is the best advice you could give our young people. I really do. Yeah.
Intuitively know it. Because to tie it all together, those young people are wise. So
they are. They really are wise beyond their years, some of them. Oh, goodness.
Jeffrey, what's next on the cards for yourself? You've got this book. There's lots of online appearances. You still write and present. Well, what's the plan next? And I'm hoping a trip to Australia might be on.
Oh, yes, please.
Hey, yeah, I was thinking about that. I got to see Melbourne.
Yes. Melbourne's the place to be.
We'd love to show you around, but that's us, you know, being huge fans. What's the thing that you get up every morning and you think this is what I want to work on next?
I am already doing what I love, and I am so lucky to be able to do that.
How many people can say that? Isn't that wonderful?
I know it's amazing.
I mean, it's great. It's wonderful
every day. And now to do that for more and more people and on a grander scale, that's where I'm going. Where that is, I don't know.
That is glorious.
Can I tell you a super secret?
Please.
We won't tell anyone.
There is in the works a TV show for me to travel around and talk to folks who are changing the world.
Yes.
And that may include international folks.
Yes. Come to Melbourne.
That's a secret. Don't tell anyone.
We won't tell anyone.
Shh. Now,
if one was to come to Melbourne.
We love you.
Now, Jeffrey, if one perhaps was to come to Melbourne on some kind of project, what would they like to see?
Can I make a suggestion? Would you like to come and meet all the children from Parents of Gender Diverse Children, because they would love
gorgeous.
To meet you.
They're gorgeous.
Oh, you just made me, I just got so emotional.
Oh, really? Oh, my God, they would love to meet you. Please.
Of course.
Okay, that's a done deal then.
Well, no, Jeffrey, you need to meet Jo's mum, Nonna.
Oh, and Nonna will come, Nonna, my mum.
Oh,
my gosh, from your description, I have to.
Oh, she's amazing. She wears a T-shirt that says Nonna's Love Trans Kids.
It's really cute.
It's
beautiful.
Okay.
Is there a takeaway message that you would like to give either to children or to parents?
Yeah, I want to address parents first.
Oh, thank you.
And I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is you're not going to get out of this without having to learn to love yourself.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that is so true.
Kids are sponge-like, and they are going to learn the most by example. And as a parent, the best advice, we didn't really get to talk about this earlier, but the best advice is you're going to have to do the dirty work or the clean work or the fun work of learning to be you, learning to love what you love, enjoy your life. You're going to have to model that for your kids. Mm. Now, the good news is, you're going to have to model that for your kids.
Isn't that fabulous advice?
So true.
That's what my mom did. That's what my mom did for me. I think that's fabulous advice. I love it.
Because everyone says, love your kids. And of course you love your children. But nobody ever says to them, love yourself.
And be yourself.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't want to speak for my mom, but if I was going to, you know, I think that she learned you got to sacrifice everything for your family. And sacrificing everything was actually her own happiness. You got to sacrifice everything for your family. And that's not true at all.
And that's what we're taught as mothers. We are taught sacrifice everything for your family.
That's also an ethnic thing, I think.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, I'm coming from the Italian ethnic thing.
I'm Greek and I get it completely.
It's true.
The shirt off my back.
But it is something that we do put on mothers.
Well, I wanted to take a second to address the kids. And I think kids, I travel the states, and the kids here don't like to be called kids. So I will say young adults. It's so funny, like 10 and 11-year-olds don't want to be called kids. Yes. That's a separate issue. For the young folk, I think you know this already, but the adults who are coming at you with some hate don't know exactly what they're up to. They haven't quite realized what the hate is doing to them and what it might be doing to you.
That's incredible. That's just incredible.
I toyed with saying more, but that's probably
beautiful.
Enough.
Jeffrey, you are amazing. I love, love, love in a Twitter sphere of hate that I just start now. Yeah. I've stopped reporting people at night because I used to really enjoy going, that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
I'm just going to report. And it does.
I follow Jeffrey and I just think, oh, that's so beautiful for kids to see. Yeah. That's so beautiful for kids to see. I just love it.
But you know what? It's also beautiful for us to see.
Yeah, it's beautiful for us to see as well.
And especially that message you've given to parents, it is a permission to love oneself, which we're never given. We're never told that.
And to be yourself. I think that's so important. Thank you so much for that message.
Not even permission. It's essential. Mm. Yes, you have permission to do it, and I'm telling you, you must.
That's it.
If you're going to raise kids, you must. Yeah.
We
show
must.
Them how it's done.
Yeah. There you go.
Jeffrey,
let's all love ourselves.
We love you.
We love you.
Thanks, gorgeous.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.